Earlier this month, a University of Washington researcher was able to send a brain signal over the internet to control the hand motions of a fellow researcher. It was actually the finger motions. So what do these emerging brain technologies that blend human and machine mean for the future of privacy and identity? Sarah Gehring joins us with some answers. She's a professor of philosophy at the University of Washington, and she leads the ethics thrust at the UW Center for Sensory Motor Neural Engineering. Sarah Gehring, I can't quite say, sensory motor neural engineering. Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
So first things first, what is sensory motor neural engineering?
So it's a form of engineering that tries to combine bioengineering and neuroscience so that you'll have devices that interact directly with our nervous systems.
All right. That makes a certain amount of sense to me. And we know about this one example. Are there other examples of things that folks here at the UW are working on?
So just recently, we heard in the newspapers about this man with a bionic leg. And that's a form of sensory motor or a form of neural engineering. They basically innervated, he lost his leg below the knee. They innervated some of those nerves that had been cut off. They basically tied them into his thigh. And then they were able to read his motor intention and make the bionic leg, as they called it, move. And it's a very fancy bionic leg, right? It has gyroscopes and it has various sensors on it that are going to allow it, and motors that are going to allow it to move much more smoothly.
So you're studying the ethics of Steve Austin, $6 million man.
That's right.
What kind of ethical questions does this brain-to-brain signaling that we mentioned earlier with the hand motion, what kind of questions does it raise for philosophers?
Well, it raises many interesting questions. I think probably most people that saw that news release and saw the story probably felt a little concerned at first, right? It's one person's brain, one person's motor intention controlling somebody else's body, and we don't like the thought of that, right? I think in our center, we're less really interested in brain-to-brain interfaces and more brain-to-computer interfaces. But with the brain-to-brain, clearly it's going to be an issue about agency. If somebody else can in some way control how you're moving your hands, right, that would be a major matter of concern.
So how do you work with researchers to incorporate these philosophical questions into what they're doing?
It's an interesting question, and I'm still trying to figure that out with the rest of the ethics team. But basically, we're going along to all the meetings, all the retreats that they have, and trying to understand the science that they're doing, which is a hard enough task. And then at every instance, we're raising ethics issues as they come up and trying to have a discussion with scientists who often don't speak the language of ethics, although they're very interested in the concerns.
I can imagine some people thinking, you know, I loved the $6 million man and $6 million woman. And, you know, if I were injured or something and were able to take advantage of this, you know, I really probably would. Why aren't these, you know, why are these more than kind of abstract questions for people?
Well, I think they're really coming closer, as we saw with the guy who has this bionic leg. He's testing it out in Chicago. But I also think there are real interesting questions here. You know, there's a lot to be gained. So this guy didn't fall as much as he did with his regular prosthetic leg. On the other hand, depending on how things are recorded or how things are stimulated, there may be a record of all the movements that he does. Who has access to that record, right? We want to make sure that those are things people can keep private if they want to keep them private. And I also think there's a, you know, there's going to be a concern there if there's a wireless component of this technology, that somebody may be able to hack into the device, right? Making it do things that the user doesn't want it to do. So we can see from the engineering that it's possible to train a machine to read a motor intention. But what if it gets that wrong, for one thing? Or what if somebody is able to hack in and actually adjust or alter that motor intention? That would be fairly disturbing.
Sarah Gehring is a professor of philosophy at the University of Washington who leads the ethics thrust at the Center for Sensory Motor Neural Engineering. I'm wondering, so is what you're saying that basically there may be technological solutions to some of these ethical concerns?
For some of them, but not necessarily all. I think a lot of them will be issues about trade-offs. What are we willing to give up in order to get a good that's coming from this technology? And one of the emphases of our thrust has been trying to include the perspectives of people with disabilities. So the end user in the language of engineering speak, I guess. We want to make sure that their concerns are brought in the midstream design process so that if there were things that they really wouldn't care about, engineers could alter that or not pay so much attention to those particular things.
So that's interesting. What's an example of a new technology that somebody who's got a disability might say, gee, I don't know, this isn't exactly where I want it to go. And their voice could be incorporated into the engineering.
So I'm not sure about the most developing technologies, right? But we can see examples from the fairly recent past. So when cochlear implants were developed, right, there's a way in which it is a sensory motor neural engineer or a sensory neural engineering device.
Those are the implants that help somebody who's deaf basically hear, but it's imperfect still.
That's right. And so there was a backlash from the deaf community. A lot of people said, we don't want these, right? It's going to change the nature of our community. We're going to lose a lot of the richness of deaf culture. And I think it's important, right, to have that perspective present when we're thinking about making changes for our ears.
I kind of laugh saying this, but there's just over 2 minutes left, and I'm wondering kind of what kinds of philosophical questions do you ask then about identity with some of these new technologies?
I think it's a really interesting question. So one thing about identity is this the sort of thing you'd want to take on? There are interesting ways that I think we expand and adjust our identities to adapt to the technologies that we use or rely on. And one of the worries, right, is that if the technology itself may change certain features of my identity, will I be able to absorb that in my identity or alter my identity to meet it? And I think some of these, right, again, just a couple of minutes, but we think about deep brain stimulators to address mood, for instance. That's one where if it works, it might be great for people who have very severe depression. On the other hand, we might really worry that it alters something about the character of the person who's getting it.
Does that same ethical question apply then to pharmaceutical drugs that could change your mood and in that sense your personality?
I think it does, although with pharmaceuticals, we have a little bit more control over it, right? We can stop taking them. We notice when we take a pill and recognize the effects, and they're going to be less immediate.
Okay. So if I'm if I'm controlled by a chip that's, you know, working over the internet or whatever, my self-understanding would change in a different way.
And especially if there's a feedback system, a closed loop system that's going to bring the feedback directly to the device, I, in a way, get taken out of that loop, or I am the loop maybe, but I may not so much be aware of the things that should be changing my mood.
So does that change my sense of what it is to be a human?
It's possible. I think that's what makes this a really exciting field to explore. It's not that we could never change certain features of that, but we want to be very aware of what those changes may be.
Sarah Gehring, thanks so much for taking the time.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
She's a professor of philosophy at the UW who leads the Ethics Thrust at the University of Washington's Center for Sensory Motor Neural Engineering. From KUOW's The Record, I'm David Hyde with Ross Reynolds.